In 2003, Courtney Act made a splash as a contestant on the first season of Australian Idol. And since then, Australia's most famous drag queen has a string of achievements under her heels, including an EP, an international tour, a stint on RuPaul's Drag Race, and winning Celebrity Big Brother UK. But for lots of us, Courtney made a more significant impact by educating people on queer issues such as gender fluidity and sexuality. Now the man behind Courtney, Shane Jenick, is stepping into the spotlight and he's just released his first children's book. It's called Confetti and the Rainbow Garden. Big welcome to Shane Jenick. Thank you for joining me on Life Matters.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited to talk about Confetti and the Rainbow Garden, but I would like to step back in time first. Can you tell me about that first Australian Idol audition?
Oh, gosh. Okay. It's 2003. I'm 21. 2003, for those of you counting, was a very long time ago. Can't do math that. 22 years ago. And I went along. Well, the auditions popped up and we didn't really know what reality television was. We didn't know what Idol was. We'd heard about Idol in America with Kelly Clarkson winning. It was season one. We didn't have social media. We had like Nokia brick monophonic phones with monochrome screens. And I went along to the auditions and I went along the first day as Shane. And then I went back the next day in drag. I'd been doing drag in Sydney. I'd moved there when I was 18 from Brisbane. And I thought, I there's like producers' auditions that you don't see before the TV auditions. So I actually got through the producer audition as Shane. And there was a sliding doors moment where I thought, oh, you're through. As Shane, like maybe this is your chance to, you know, pretend that you're just a regular, humdrum, run-of-the-mill, straight white male. But I knew better, and I knew that Courtney was the thing that I loved and the thing that I enjoyed doing and the thing that made me different. And so I went back the next day in drag as Courtney, and I made it through. And then, of course, you know, they didn't tell Mark Holden, Marsha Hines or Dicko that I was coming through twice. And so they said no to me as Shane on the television. And then they said yes to me as Courtney. And it was just such a wonderful ride for the next few weeks. Even once I got booted off the show, I got brought back as a wild card. And then I got brought back several times throughout the rest of the season to interview people and then performed as the opening live performance at the Sydney Opera House. The grand final of Idol that year was not just huge, but it was the most watched television event since Princess Diana's funeral.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty epic.
Shane, I actually remember watching that audition as I was probably, I don't know, a year younger than you at the time and just like completely starry-eyed with this whole new reality TV thing. Mm-hmm. And in my later adult years, I've thought back to that time and thought, I wonder if it was a gimmick, this sort of like come as Shane on one day and then come back as Courtney on the other. But what I'm hearing is that was truly the story, how it actually unfolded.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was my gimmick. Reality television wasn't like produced back then. It was more like a documentary of the events that happened. These days, it's a lot more constructed. They've got a lot more runs under their belt and they know exactly what they're doing. But back then it was sort of, I think, more trial and error, a bit more chaos. And I loved being a part of that era. And you know what was really lovely is I always felt like everybody appreciated me being there, from the producers to the hosts to the judges to the other contestants. And in particular, Ian Dicko Dixon, who, you know, was the straight bloke on the panel, and he really lent in and appreciated the showmanship that I was bringing to Idol.
Tell me about, you sort of mentioned that there was that moment there where you're like, oh, maybe I'm going to get away with this, mm-hmm. and kind of slide through. It was such a straight-laced
world.
Yeah, world then. And then you sort of managed to get Courtney kind of through as well. Like, what was that conflict like for you?
Well, it was more like voices from the outside sort of saying that there was something, you know, something about my identity and what I did to sort of be hidden. I mean, if you look at pop culture at large at that time, you could certainly be forgiven for thinking that that was true because there's zero visibility anywhere. But I think I always loved performing. I've always loved doing drag. I've loved like the femininity and the sparkles and the costumes and celebrating femininity and embracing it in a way that I was told that I shouldn't because, you know, I think growing up in Brisbane in the 80s and 90s and probably anywhere else in Australia, you had these sort of pervasive misogynistic and homophobic ideas and that it wasn't okay for a little boy to be feminine. But, you know, it took me many years, but growing up I realised that it's okay for boys to be feminine and it's okay for girls to be masculine. And, yeah, we all sort of embody different qualities and that felt like something fun and important to bring to the idol stage.
So you've been this real visible pioneer in this space for other people, lots of other queer people, as I said before. Who were you looking to when you were growing up?
Well, I would say I used to call sickies from school if I saw during the preview of Good Morning Australia with Bert Newton that Carlotta, Bob Down, Jeannie Little, or Rhonda Birchmore were going to be on telly.
Okay.
Now, I believe only the first two of those names are queer. But there was just something, those little glimmers of hope, of those little glimmers of something that spoke to the soul of who I was. I didn't know I was, you know, a teenager in high school, but there was something about Jeannie Little and Carlotta and Maria Venuti and Rhonda and Bob that there was something about those people that didn't fit inside the box of society, and that was what resonated with me.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. The voice you're hearing is that of Shane Jenneck. You might know him better as his alter ego, Courtney Act. Shane's just released his first children's book. It's called Confetti and the Rainbow Garden. And Shane, we have got some really beautiful texts on this. One person says, "Even Cowgirls Get the Blues was a great book for me as a teenager."
Oh, yeah.
Confirming fun for figuring out my sexuality. Another says, "I have an artwork I bought from my graduating year of art school back in the 90s. It's a print of an independent, bare-chested woman riding a bull with joyful abandon. It reminds me to embrace life to the fullest. I just turned 60, this person says, and I've stayed true to the way that artwork talked to me or reflected my desire at the time." Amazing. Tell me about this book, what you were hoping to get across with Confetti and the Rainbow Garden.
Well, Confetti in the Rainbow Garden is a sweet story about a plant child called Confetti. And they're in Nan's garden and they know it's springtime because and that they haven't bloomed yet. And they're wondering what their flowers are going to look like. And they're worried that they might be too quiet or too loud. And so they go around the garden catching up with all of their cousins one by one who are all sort of plant children, but they're all Australian native plants as well. And Confetti sort of meets with each one of them and sees what they're about and sort of tries to work out whether what their interests are Confetti's interests. And then ultimately kind of heads to their favourite place in the garden where they love sitting under the golden wattle tree to paint and to draw. And Confetti also knows that Nan has named them after her favourite tree in the garden. So the name Confetti is somehow linked to a tree and they're trying to work out how. And when they're sitting there under the golden wattle tree, the rainbow lorikeets are squawking away and playing in the tree and all of the yellow flowers are sprinkling to the ground like confetti. Mm. And that's when they realise that that's their name and the thing that they love the most, which is painting and drawing and art, and the thing that feels most authentic to them is the thing that a you know, the thing that they should follow and be. And it's just about identity. It's about authenticity. You know, it's for 3 to 7 year old, so it's very subtle. But it's just about exploring different, you know, hobbies or different interests or different passions, and seeing which ones fit you and which ones don't, and sort of leaning into the authenticity and finding out what really works for you.
Why a children's book?
Well, when I was writing my memoir back during the lockdown days, I wrote something that resembled a children's book accidentally one day when I was writing. It was sort of like a parable about a little house and how, you know, people had tried to decorate it and the council had tried to regulate it, and sort of this sort of story about identity there. And I messaged my publisher, Lex, and I said, I think I've written a kid's book. And she was like, all right, well, let's just focus on this book that we're writing at the moment.
Can you just finish the book that I've already commissioned?
Yeah. And she, I thought that was a no. And then as soon as I finished, as soon as we put the memoir to bed, she was like, all right, now let's talk about that children's book. And the story about the house ended up as the epilogue in my memoir. And then I was trying to adapt it to a kid's book, but it was actually a bit harder. And then I was laying on my bed one afternoon and some rainbow lorikeets popped up on the balcony and they were squawking away as they always do. And I thought, where do you guys go after you leave my balcony? And I pictured them in a wattle tree, you know, indulging on the nectar, and pictured all the flowers falling to the ground like confetti. And when my sister was pregnant, I suggested that a very good name for a child, regardless of their gender, was Confetti.
Did she call her child Confetti?
She called her child Billy, who the book is dedicated to.
Also good for a boy or a girl.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because I went to watch Billy play soccer last night with my sister, and I was trying to explain to him, you know, the idea of this book and where it came from. And my sister was like, well, yeah, before you were born, we were going to call you, well, no, actually, no one was going to call you Confetti, but just Shane wanted to call you Confetti. And so I sort of just had that name rolling around for the idea of like naming someone or something Confetti, just because I thought it was a cute word. And so I named this book Confetti.
Beautiful. Thinking back to your own childhood, were there books that still stick in your mind in the way that I suppose you hope that this book will for kids these days?
Yeah, well, one of the visual inspirations that I love were the Graham Bass books, Animalia and 11th Hour. They were so rich and detailed. And one of the things that I've taken from those books is that, I don't know if anyone remembers, there was like it wasn't even a perfectly drawn mouse. It was almost like a symbol for a mouse that appeared on every page. And the pages were so rich that you had to search for it. And so in Confetti in the Rainbow Garden, there's a silent character who is an ibis. And the ibis is getting up to mischief on each opening. And so when I read this book to some kids the other day in the Botanic Gardens, they found looking for the ibis to be one of the joys, and an ibis even wandered through the story time. As I was telling the story, a real life ibis wandered in and said hello, and that sort of felt like a sign. I'm a godless atheist who doesn't believe in anything, but I was like, that is a sign.
Well, you are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm chatting with Shane Jenick, a.k.a. Courtney Act, about his new children's book, Confetti in the Rainbow Garden. Matthew says, Elton, from my first exposure on my 7th birthday in 1973, thrashing up and down the hallways, exclaiming, I can, bitch, to my first live exposure in 1983, age 17, Matthew says he was the embodiment of queer power. Another text, I feel lucky to have been a teen in the mid-80s when there were so many queer and or androgynous pop stars on TV. Divine, Annie Lennox, Bronski Beat, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Boy George, Pet Shop Boys, they all made life at a homophobic Catholic boys' school in Castle Hill more bearable for me. Well, Shane, you mentioned before the reading in the botanical gardens with the blessing of the ibis, or the ibis that came from central casting, whichever way you want to look at it. You've done book readings as Courtney. You've been on play school as Courtney, and it always hasn't always gone down well.
No, I mean, well, it did with basically everybody in the country. I think that's the thing when we talk about these sort of very small dissents in public opinion that can sometimes catch a lot of volume, is that I did play school story time. I read a lovely book called The Spectacular Suit, and it went really well. Everybody loved it. And then a senator in Adelaide raised issue with it during the ABC Senate estimates. And he held up a picture of me, like a colour photocopy that someone had printed out, and asked why the ABC was using government money to groom children, which is kind of like, it's a despicable allegation that is speaking Australian politics with an American accent. We see it a lot in the United States, trying to create a moral panic with the, would somebody think of the children, kind of rhetoric that we've seen used against the LGBT community for decades. Thankfully, you know, Senator Sarah Hanson-Young was there, and she jumped in and said that, you know, that's a serious allegation and shouldn't be used to win political points, and that using terms of abuse where none is present actually diminishes the instances where it actually is happening and creates a dangerous environment for young people. And I think really that view was pretty much shot down by everybody, even, dare I say, the folks over on Sky News, who are known usually for their less compassionate takes on things of such issue. So it seemed pretty much across the board that everybody was like, what are you talking about? This was a lovely book. Courtney did a lovely job reading it. And so I think that's important to remember, that when you hear these sort of dissenting voices, you have to work out what is the proportionate representation of this opinion in the public. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing about journalism is that journalists choose what to report on, but they also choose what not to report on. Mm. And I think there's something in that, because in this day and age of outrage culture and social media algorithms polarizing us and using outrage to get clicks, it's very easy to jump into a moral panic and kind of participate in this conversation that's built to win political points. But I think that, I don't know, there's been something quite Australian about the idea of not jumping in on this fringe far right idea. And I think most people can see, oh, look, there are, when I was a kid, I remember going to the fairy shop in Brisbane, and my friend's mum would take us there, and not to name drop, but the Veronicas and I, they weren't the Veronicas then, they were just Lisa and Jess, but we would go to the fairy shop, and there was a lady dressed as a fairy reading us a storybook. And I feel like drag story time probably came about because a couple of lesbian mums went along to one of these, you know, readings at a library or something, and they thought, oh, this is lovely, isn't it? Our kid gets to hear this book, and wouldn't it be good if the book was a little bit more reflective of our lived experiences, two mums. What about our friend Ginger, who does drag? Our kid always loves Ginger because she's so sparkly and so fun and so colourful. Let's get Ginger to read the book. And I'd say that's probably how drag story time came about, because it kind of makes sense. Drag's so colourful and fun. And so I think back to the fairy shop, and instead of having a woman dressed as a fairy, now you've got a fairy dressed as a woman.
Well, Brett has called in. Tell me about the art that changed you.
Well, what changed me, as a teenage gay back in the 70s, it was Reg Livermore.
Oh, wow.
First of all, in I didn't see him in Hair, but I saw him in Jesus Christ Superstar, and he was the original Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Show. And then, of course, the thing that really rocked my world was shows like Betty Blockbuster Follies, Wonder Woman, Sacred Cow that followed on. And he was not just shamelessly, he was brutally gay. And he just seemed to do it without really creating any fuss. It was just who he was. And he put together these extraordinary theatre pieces that challenged, confronted, confused, and it bloods you. And like for myself as an actor and a stand-up, and that I was blooded on that, and that then informs everything that you do and in how you walk through life. But he was such a game changer. You know, for his time. It was just extraordinary.
Brent, thank you so much for the call. Shane, I'm thinking about how Brent's describing Reg Livermore there and the character of Courtney Act, and they're both utterly unapologetic. What's the power in that for you?
I mean, I think my initial lack of apology came from naivety. I was just 21 and doing what I loved, and I think I've always focused on what I love to do and not worried too much about outside comments. I've always, I try to be aware of, you know, political and social conversations and paying attention to feedback and questioning, well, does this make sense? Does this not make sense? Is this something I should take on board? But ultimately, having a good understanding of, like, I don't know, I grew up in a theatre school, the Fame Talent Agency and Theatre Company in Brisbane, going there and learning the craft of singing and dancing and acting, but really more than anything, performance. Fame was less regimented in those days when it came to, the grades and the lessons of dancing and whatnot, and it was more about how you entertain a crowd and put on a bloody good show. And so I've always loved that aspect of performance. And then by virtue of just who I was, that became political in that, you know, drag wasn't a common thing on television. I mean, even being an out queer person back then was unheard of. I think I was the first queer person anywhere in the world on an Idol franchise, out queer person. And so I've always just tried to have fun and enjoy myself. These days, obviously, there can be more dissent. It's sort of weird, like everything was celebrated and lovely, and there's just been this sort of slightly right turn in the last few years, I think, impacted greatly by the Trump administration in the US and a lot of their anti-LGBT rhetoric. And so I'm aware that that happens, but I think that you've got to meet fear with love. And now more than ever is the time to be visible and to be unapologetic and to celebrate, you know, not just my identity and not just share my story, but try to lift up as many voices and share voices. I think because I know ultimately that, like, I grew up in a heteronormative Brisbane environment. Mm. And I know what that's like and I know what that means. And then I broke out of that and I came to understand maybe who I was more authentically. And I understand that there's nothing wrong with that and there's no shame in it for me. So I think that's the reason I'm able to be unapologetic, because I guess very fortunately my mum and dad have always supported me and loved me and I think given me that foundation of knowing that who I am is more than enough. Mm. And so bringing that forward and celebrating that and showing other queer people, and not just queer people, but showing everybody that, you know, the different colours and shades of queer people that exist and doing that unapologetically.
Meeting fear with love. Shane, thank you so much for joining me today.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.